The demise of Blondin's plan to end the Depression did not halt his involvement in economic problems and concerns at the national level. With the publisher of the Grand Rapids Herald Review, Lawrence A. Rossman, Blondin launched an ambitious and valiant effort to set the newsprint industry of the United States back on a path of profit and stability. And remember, we've looked at this. There's a virtual war on between the newspapers and the newsprint manufacturers. The newspapers claiming that they are the foundation of democracy, their price has to be kept low because wide distribution of their papers was so important, and then they have used the power that they have through the press to do an awful lot of lobbying and putting pressures on Congress, and that has resulted in the allowance in of newsprint from Canada without any tariff. So this has really been a very, very hurtful situation, again, as we've seen before, to the newsprint industry. Well, in the realm of newsprint affairs, a publisher and a paper maker were an unlikely pair. Unfortunately, such collaboration was rare. More cooperation would have been beneficial for both the industries they represented. Blondin and Rossman were drawn together by their common backgrounds as small-town newspaper publishers, as well as by other interests they held in common. Rossman was an energetic individual who pursued his own career with competency and aggressiveness. His Herald Review was a top-notch weekly newspaper, consistently carrying strong editorial comment and careful, thorough reporting of local news. In 1932, the paper placed third in the best front page and seventh in best all-around weekly competition in the United States. It was the only Minnesota paper to appear in the top 10. Blondin and Rossman were alike in many ways, and as their mutual trust and respect grew, Blondin discovered one of the relatively few people with whom he could candidly talk and philosophize. As the two became fast friends, they hunted and fished together, indulged in Blondin's penchant for just driving around, or met for conversation and friendly argument. When apart, they corresponded. As a dedicated Grand Rapids booster, Rossman bore a strong empathy for the paper mill, fully recognizing its importance to the community. That and his friendship with Blondin led to his involvement in the concerns and politics of the newsprint industry as a whole. In 1934, explaining he was writing from the standpoint of a newspaper publisher, but also from the viewpoint of a citizen of a community in which newsprint is manufactured, Rossman published a pamphlet titled Newsprint. Even though he identified himself as a publisher, Newsprint was more reflective of his concern for the Blondin Paper Company and the future of newsprint production than of a newspaper publisher's efforts to keep prices low. Lawrence Rossman's sympathies were clearly with the paper makers. Newsprint appealed for fairness in establishing a suitable market price for paper. Rossman suggested that the best way to obtain that fair price was for the newsprint industry to bring its case to the public. The selfish approach of the powerful Publishers Association, Rossman felt, could be countered with reasonable argument and a call for mutual cooperation by an understanding public. Rossman defined the newsprint industry's problem in an address to the Minneapolis Civic and Commerce Association. After an overview of newsprint history, he told his audience that the destruction of the industry would not be for the good of the country. Blondin fully supported Rossman's efforts and work on behalf of the newsprint industry. Blondin wrote to Royal Kellogg of the National Newsprint Association, stating that it was painfully apparent that the newsprint industry was opposed by the most influential organization, he's referring to the press, of course, in the United States. Therefore, Blondin suggested every possible effort should be put forth to make known the justice of the manufacturer's cause. Then, just as the campaign to save the newsprint industry was getting underway, the Newsprint Association dropped the project because of a lack of funds, and there was no support coming from them. Blandin relayed that bad news to Rossman, hoping to reinstate the valuable work you've been doing just as soon as conditions warranted. Blandin's letter came as a blow, and Rossman wrote back expressing regrets that the newsprint industry does not find itself in a position to do those things most essential to its purposes. Rossman once described his own letters about matters pertaining to newsprint as red hot. Venting his frustration, he told Blandin that the National Association lacked both the independence and the courage to do those things which necessity really requires. But they continued to keep going and also added a newsletter, a monthly newsletter that was published and given as wide a distribution as they could. But both men were feeling deep discouragement as their work appeared so ineffective in terms of rallying the newsprint producers to action on their own behalf. Blandin prepared a memorandum relative to plans and efforts to stabilization of the newsprint industry, in which he especially criticized the lack of leadership within the industry as being the major problem of the manufacturers. As 1934 drew to a close, Blandin wrote to Rossman, "While I'm perfectly willing to devote a lot of time and some money, as I have in the past, in the effort to put the newsprint industry of the United States where it should be. However, I feel quite helpless through the lack of moral and financial support from those in the industry who have much more at stake than I do." Rossman responded, "I have your letter, and the feeling of discouragement which it expresses is entirely justified. The past few months have been discouraging and embarrassing." But even though he sometimes felt like an intruder into newsprint affairs, Rossman maintained that everything the two had done was just and necessary, and that neither should give up the struggle. In 1937, Rossman suggested a renewal of their efforts, but Blandin replied, "Thus far there is not the slightest indication that my efforts or work are wanted. Therefore, it must be a closed book so far as I am concerned." Rossman tried to revive Blandin's flagging spirits, emphasizing the importance of the work to the Blandin Paper Company as well as to the whole industry. He suggested that with Blandin's experience both as publisher and papermaker, he was the ideal person to carry the torch. But Blandin only replied that our personal efforts and also the effect of the bulletin was what might be termed a flop. Nothing is a success that does not succeed. And Rossman wished neither to agree or disagree with that assumption. He maintained that the work had shown what can be done, and he wanted to continue on as long as they possibly could. But Blandin, publisher and papermaker with vision and perspective, backed by the articulate and dedicated Lawrence Rossman, had made a reasonable attempt to do what both felt was necessary. They had sacrificed time and energy to carry on what Rossman always thought of as the justice of their issue, but their attempt to aid and revive a floundering United States industry was over. So once again, a big effort on the part of Blandin working at the national level here. And everything that the two did do was certainly worthwhile and was well put, and the lack of support from the newsprint manufacturers was certainly not to their credit. Well, with that project over, Charles Blandin can turn his full attention back to the operation of the mill. We noted in 1931 that Blandin had a fairly optimistic idea that the Depression would soon be coming to an end and that all of the expansion that had been done for the mill would pay off and would prove to have been justified. But, of course, the Depression does not come to an end. And in 1938, as we move ahead a few years, Blandin is looking at the whole situation again, and now he judges the expansion of the mill and the addition of the number 3 machine from a mechanical standpoint successful. And what he meant by that was that production had increased considerably. the company sold the little and inefficient Black Clausen number 2 machine and gradually brought the new Ford Junior to an acceptable operating capacity. The amount of paper being made was dramatically increased. It was more than 5 times the amount produced when Blandin had first assumed control of the company 20 years earlier. But the operation was more than a mechanical success. The residents of Grand Rapids continued to relish the scope and magnitude of the expanded plant. In 1930, there were 137 full-time workers, and by 1936, it was up to 231 employees. And at the same time, the plant was maintaining full production. There was no cutback in terms of hours and no unemployment. So it was just a totally different situation than what you found everywhere else. And Blandin was continuing to ease Grand Rapids through the worst of the effects of the Depression. Information compiled by the company indicated that employees of the mill occupied about 200 houses in Grand Rapids in the mid-1930s. Directly or indirectly, about half the people in the town were supported by wages paid by the company. Major expenditures for wood contributed to the economic support of many others in the region. Blandin Paper Company paid $251,000 for pulpwood in 1935. Despite these accomplishments, Blandin found little but frustration in trying to profitably manufacture newsprint in Grand Rapids during the Depression years. Even with the best equipment of latest design and the most careful of management, his operation of the mill brought no more satisfaction than had his attempts to revive the sagging newsprint industry. Blandin ruefully continued that 1938 assessment with the words, "Experience has shown that in view of the length of the Depression, the company would have been better off to have closed the mill." Wow, what a drastic conclusion he's come to there. The price of newsprint remained at such a low level that it was utterly impossible to make a profit, no matter how efficient the machine, the mill, and the men. He further explained that if production was small, losses would be large because of the expense of maintaining the mill and the equipment. But discouragingly, on the other hand, because the basic price was too low, the more paper that was made, the larger the losses. Blandin noted the price for newsprint at about $40 per ton, which he called below the cost of production to any and every mill operating on the North American continent. Figures preserved from 1 month of production in Grand Rapids in 1935 show a manufacturer's cost of 20 cents per ton more than the selling price. The financial forecast so carefully prepared in 1931 had proved inaccurate, both in its expectation that the national economic condition would take a turn for the better and that the company would earn some profits. In 1933, after the expansion, the Blandin Paper Company did make a profit. The expanded mill and the two great Ford Juniors and all the elaborate complexities of producing paper netted a profit of exactly $164.05 for the entire year. Imagine that. After all that investment and all that had been done, $164.05 for the whole year. In 1934 and 35, figures edged into the red with a net loss of $43,000 for the 2 years. Those unsatisfactory figures, however, did not foretell any imminent collapse of the company. The absence of large outstanding debt and the earlier reinvesting of profits in the company rather than using them to pay stock dividends had saved the company. Blandin made his 1938 assessment when the future still looked bleak. One may easily understand and sympathize with his uncharacteristic gloom, but he had persevered, and in the long run, the modernization and expansion of the plant would pay off. Recovery, as well as a significant and far-reaching change in mill production policy, lie ahead.